There's got to be an explanation to all these UFO sightings, right? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
Yes. Is fucking mic working, Jackson?
Yeah.
Jackson, this is our seventh take.
Yep.
Welcome, friends, to the Tim McKernan Show. It's questions from the audience. Today's date, Thursday, November 16th, 2023. We are in the Longo Big Studios. Timothy Michael McKernan, Jackson Burkett, KG in O-Town with a cameo, and then Peter Rep is here, but most likely not participating. But KG in O-Town is participating. Welcome to the Longo Big Studios, and welcome to QFTA.
Been waiting for this moment for a long time.
Is that right? Never
missed an episode.
A lot of people like that QFTA.
You got any erotic stories today?
No, not at all. Let's see what I got here. I'll tell you exactly. I'll go into the QFTA file. We haven't gotten one since August. Cuffing season leads to...
Yeah, and the one in August sucked. It's like some guy throwing up.
We had two of them in one. Yeah, like somebody threw up on somebody.
Yeah.
Let's see what we got here. This is like a really kind one. How about this? I don't even know if this is for QFTA. Hey, Tim, just listened to the most recent episode and wanted to commend you and Jackson for having a very respectful and honest discussion on racism, bigotry, anti-Semitism. I say anti.
Either way.
Yeah. Boy, I was not expecting that, but I really appreciated Jackson's perspective and willingness to educate us on his experience. I'm not sure how to let him know, but I appreciate if you could either share this feedback with him or let me know how I can email him directly. How about that? That's from Dan.
Thanks, Dan. Yeah, thank you.
We got a few emails on that.
Yeah, and that was good to see. Good to see people had a positive response to that because it's a really tough topic. And it's so, there's so many layers to it. So to like, you know, kind of briefly touch on it is only doing, you know, part of it. But I'm glad to hear that people had a positive
response. Wise beyond your years.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And thank you to Dan. That's a very wonderful email to send. You know, like it's easy to send something when you're complaining or upset about something. But actually, I respect and really appreciate more when people send something positive.
I agree with that, not just because... We're on the receiving end of the negative ones quite often, but the presence of mind to go, you know what, usually I complain, but in this case, I'm grateful for something, and it'll take me 1 minute, and it'll mean a great deal, especially
Absolutely.
To somebody who is 25 and talking about an incredibly difficult topic. You can be 75 and have a tough time talking through it, and I do agree, you handled that incredibly well.
Thank you.
KG in O-Town, this one's QFTA STL Chiefs fans. It's from Kenny Wu.
Ooh.
Woo.
Kenny, well, you're sitting in Doug's chair.
Yeah, and I am sitting in Doug's chair. Peter Rep's in my chair, and KG is in Iggy's chair.
Right. Keeping it warm for him for tomorrow.
Right? And Jackson's in the Plowhawks chair, just to give you a visual here in the Longo Big Studios before I read it. Thank you to all of the sponsors who make this podcast possible. That's James Carlton of the Carlton State Farm Insurance Agency, online at carltoninsurance.net. He is my insurance agent, and I would like him to become your insurance agent. He has 339 five-star reviews. That just tells you what kind of operation they're running in Webster Groves. That's James Carlton of the Carlton State Farm Insurance Agency. And then Seth Goldkamp, as we are sitting here on November 16th, had I not asked Jackson to do it, I believe he would be on the golf course right now. Even though it's 4:18, which means it's getting dark. God, it's 67 degrees. How about that?
Yeah.
This has got to be it.
Yeah, tomorrow it's going to be warm. Saturday it's borderline. But for Thanksgiving, we're freezing.
Oh, my God. How about that? The two coldest days in the last month are going to be Halloween and Thanksgiving.
Yep. Crazy. Yeah, and a week prior.
37 on Thanksgiving.
Yep. Almost 70 degrees, and then it's going to drop to about freezing. Crazy.
Unbelievable. But get your furnace tuned up with Seth Goldkamp of Design Air Heating and Cooling. All you do is click on designairservice.com and click book now, and they'll come over. They did that with me. Doug is a client as well, Doug Vaughn of TMA. It's Design Air Heating and Cooling online at designairservice.com. Jackson, why don't you tell the people about Mark Hanna of Evergreen Well Strategies, because he's a wonderful gentleman.
He is indeed, and I had a meeting with Mark Hanna yesterday.
Oh, is that right? You were trying to figure out where to launch some of that capital.
Right, right. Yeah, well, I'm looking at so many different options in terms of, venture capital.
You said you wanted some risky plays.
Yeah,
you said,
yeah.
I've got enough blue chip. Let's go risky.
No doubt, yeah. Looking in a bunch of different markets, foreign markets.
I know you're big in the foreign markets.
Yeah, but I had a meeting with him at his office. And
how's that office look?
Good, yeah. Real good, real good. Great spot right there, real close to here. And it was wonderful. And I think I left it.
He's by the shack.
Right by the shack, right by Grassi's. And it was lovely because you had a conversation. Of course, we talked a little bit about finances and stuff and some habits to get into and some good strategies, but more so we talked about life. And I think the best way to describe a conversation with Mark Hanna is he knows exactly how to balance your perspective when it comes to the sliding scale or the spectrum of happiness and money. That balance. And he's so
really
good.
Nice.
He's so good at explaining that to his clients. I left that meeting with such a big smile on my face, not only because it was a great meeting and there was good things discussed, but because I know I have somebody like him in my corner. And that is worth everything to me. That's exactly why I work with Mark Hanna, and it's exactly why you should work with Mark Hanna.
His number is 314-889-0503, or you can go online at evergreenstl.com. Both Jackson and I feel the same way about Mark. He really is first class, and you're right, balancing life perspective with financial perspective. And finally, Mungen S. St. Louis Acura and Mungen S. Burkhardt Alton Toyota online at stlouisacura.com and altontoyota.com, the official HVAC, automotive provider of TMA and the Tim McKernan Show podcast, and the presenting sponsor of Balloon Party. Jackson, did you miss it today? Be honest with me, because you know, there it is. That was a no.
I do love doing Balloon Party, like, for real. I do thoroughly enjoy doing it with you. But, you know, when you don't, just not having to do something that you normally do, it breaks it up a little bit. I love doing Balloon Party afterwards, posting the podcast and stuff and doing all the other stuff.
The menial jobs.
It just gets a tad tedious, but that's the gig, you know. You get to goof around for 4 hours with people you really like. And so part of that is doing something.
Then you pay the bill and you pay the tab at the end of the night.
Yeah, exactly.
At 11 o'clock, you pay the tab.
That's exactly what it is. So not doing that, I would say, is actually like, I appreciate that. But doing the show itself, I really do enjoy.
How was TMA today?
It was good. It was good.
There it is.
here's how
it's very uncomfortable, and Jackson knows. I know.
Yeah, I know.
Usually I'll text him, but in this case I got to ask him face to face. Well, in case O-Town's giving off tells down at the end of the dais.
It got to a point. There was one point where I turned to Doug and started talking about Blues hockey, if that gives you any indication of where the show was at the time.
They didn't play last evening as we sit here.
Didn't matter.
Preview the matchup with the powerhouse that is the San Jose Sharks.
Yeah, we broke it down.
I believe they have 2 wins on the season as we are.
Listen, you go to Northern California, and if you can come back without any blood on your jersey, you're just happy to escape there, you know.
No, I know what you mean.
With your ass.
Can you name a player on the Sharks, Jackson?
No.
I don't know if I could name one on the Sharks in 2023.
Is
Timo Meyer?
Is he still there? Okay. But I mean,
Thomas Hertl?
The hand pass threesome.
Erickson.
They're all gone.
Was Erickson one of those? Is there an Erickson? Carlson?
Carlson. Thornton and Burns. That was the hand pass threesome. Am I correct on that?
I think
that's
right.
They sat there smugly after game three.
That was so great.
And then they just got skull fucked the rest of the way.
But what if Evander Kane didn't hit the post?
Didn't hit the post. That was unbelievable. That broadcast was up there with the Missouri-Georgia broadcast and Aaron Taylor and whoever that other guy was. That was horrendous.
Yeah.
Let's see. The Sharks have 2 wins. That's correct. 2-13-1. There you go. The Sharks are sitting there with 5 points. They're the only team in the NHL with single-digit points, and you and Doug broke that down.
Well, yeah. Yeah, you know, and we're both really looking forward to the 9:30 puck drop. That's just outstanding.
Sure.
Yeah, love a nice West Coast game. Mm-hmm. That'll be a nice palate cleanser after Missouri-Minnesota.
Yeah, you got that going.
Yeah, 8 p.m. Oh, boy, I'm all nervous.
Are you really?
Well, the win against Memphis would mean that this was kind of free-rolling, and now you got to get some non-con wins, and you got Kansas and Illinois coming down the pike, so it's be good.
Jackson's nervous on November 16th about his Fighting Tigers. I say his. I just don't have the investment.
I get it.
The three of us here, Peter, you're always welcome to chime in, but Peter's sitting here working on sound story. which is why I'm in the facilities on my day off, and will be in the facilities again on my day off tomorrow. And Peter sits here and works with me, as does KG and Otan. Hell, Jackson does too. The level of nerves for Saturday, Missouri, Florida, is that number still at 10, by the way?
Probably 10. I thought it was 10 and a half. I don't think it's moved. I
Missouri has a 70% chance of winning both of their remaining games, for the record, in football.
Yeah. If you were
so Missouri could lose to Minnesota tonight, and I might have to be reminded about it, honestly. But if Missouri lost to Florida, it wouldn't bother me like the LSU loss and the Georgia loss. I think it would bother some Missouri fans, maybe more, actually, and, which is kind of an odd – I'm not saying they're odd. I'm just saying my view on it. But that would – I think it would hurt some of the momentum. But I'm already sold on the product – the program, excuse me, taking significant steps. So, you know, loss to Florida. They're already out of the college football playoff mix, so it kind of doesn't – it wouldn't bother me as much. What about you boys?
It would leave a bad taste in my mouth because I think this team is
Would it bother you more than LSU and Georgia?
Definitely not. No, no, no.
What about you, KJ? No tenders, real quickly. Let me go around here.
Yeah.
I think it would.
Wow.
I think it would just because I expect.
You come in here and go all contrarian.
No,
I like this. It's good.
I expect a win Saturday. I'm looking to get those last two.
You didn't expect the wins in the other two?
Not necessarily. Yeah. I thought I had a little money on Mizzou money line against Georgia, and I legit thought they could have gotten it done. Obviously, it didn't happen, but I'm looking for that New Year's Six bowl, and I think it would really bother me to have a letdown on Saturday.
Yeah,
I think it would.
All right, nothing wrong with that. I'll be irritated too. It just not to the level of the like my intensity. Honestly, it's our anniversary this weekend, and we're going to dinner at the exact time of the game, and so that is. That kind of gives you an idea.
Right.
I could have been invited to a daisy chain during the Missouri-Georgia game, and I would have politely declined.
Right.
So it gives you an idea of where I am on.
What dog shit timing that would have been.
The daisy chain?
Yeah.
Hey, we have a daisy chain at 2:30 on Saturday. Tim, we'd like you to be there. It's going to be all women engaging in oral, but we'd like to have you there.
Isn't that your dream?
It'll get everybody really aroused if you're sitting there. Sure. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to decline. Missouri's playing Georgia. Can you start the daisy chain a little earlier?
Yeah, or later.
Well, if they lose, I might not be in a great spot.
Right. Well, nothing would cheer you up quicker.
Yeah, than a daisy chain. That could be the title of today's podcast. Oh, the number is 11 and a half.
Okay, so it's moved up a point.
Yeah.
Nice.
Point and a half. I saw 10. I guess you saw 10 and a half.
I thought I saw 10, but I could be wrong. But, yeah, I thought, yeah, I mean, that means a lot of money is coming out of Missouri. I guess the only fear, because they're clearly more talented than Florida, but the only fear is...
I have not seen much of Florida at all this year. I saw them dick around at the end with South Carolina to beat them. I saw them get pounded by Georgia.
Yeah.
I don't think I saw any of their win against Tennessee. Maybe some of that Utah game that started the season back in August.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Alabama's a completely different football team now than they were then.
Big time. Yeah, totally. But the Florida-South Carolina game, that was... one of the weirder games because that was right before the Kentucky Missouri game, I feel like.
Yeah,
so because that was a night game, so I watched a little of that, but I do not know much about Florida.
Anybody want any of this? I'll take Tennessee in the 10 points.
10 points at Neyland.
I thought I was gonna have people jumping all over that.
Well,
you get Georgia,
yeah, but Georgia just needs to win, like, they're not in the mode where they have to go beat somebody's ass, like, they control their own destiny probably more than any other team in the nation.
You're all grown up and you're all grown up. I thought I was going to take 100 off you real quick.
Well, if you remember, I said if Tennessee beat Missouri, that atmosphere at Neyland would be the best atmosphere in all of college football this year. And I still think it's going to be right up there, even though I'm sure Tennessee fans are, if I was despondent after LSU, I can only imagine what they're going like after Cody Schrader just ripped him a new asshole. But I still think more so than any fan base, I feel like they just want to beat other teams so they can rub it in their face. So I bet that atmosphere is going to be raucous in Knoxville. So I think Georgia wins. 10 points kind of scares me to an extent.
All right. The number started at 8.5. It's up to 10, and 85% of the bets on Georgia, 86% of the money. So there was not a
discrepancy.
So there's not a discrepancy there.
I'll take it.
You want it.
I'll take Georgia.
All right. 100.
About 50.
All right, it's fine. I thought you'd throw around $100 bets with Iggy.
I don't know how that rumor got started. It was only a $50
okay,
bet.
Fair
50's
enough.
Kind of my unit size.
All right, that's fine. Fair enough. Yeah, I'm like, oh, if you're doing 100 with Iggy, then I assume.
I think losing that money to Iggy, losing the bet to Iggy hurt worse than the actual loss itself.
100%. I get that.
What,
Jackson,
you
have you
the
been
LSU
in
the LSU game?
What's that?
You lost the LSU game?
I did. Yeah.
Oh, God. I would.
Well, he took them. We did straight up. We didn't have a spread there.
You wouldn't have even covered the spread because
right,
of that pick six.
It was bad beat season.
Well, he said they were going to lose by 21.
Yeah.
I know. But you know he doesn't
follow anything.
Makes a lot of declarative statements.
Have you guys been to Neyland Stadium?
I have not.
I have.
I don't even know what SEC. I think I've been. I've been to Gainesville, but it wasn't at a game. I've been to a game, Auburn, Arkansas, and Fayetteville, War Memorial, and Little Rock. I think that's the extent of my SEC travels. I am not a well-traveled. I've also driven by Baton Rouge. After the Rammies lost to the Patriots, KMOV flew us out of Baton Rouge.
I went to that one. The last time Mizzou was down there, I made that trip. That was a hell of an environment. I think we got boat race that night.
Oh, you went to Baton Rouge?
Yeah.
Oh, did you? That was 2017.
Yeah.
I think the Mad Hatter had just been whacked, I think.
That sounds right.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken.
But yeah, that Neyland, they get over 100,000 in there. That place is crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's like a...
And it's right on the river, just a cool environment for a fall football game.
It strikes me as... Let me put it this way. If I were running a book... I would expect a shitload of Georgia bets on Saturday. That's
yeah. It's it might be the squarest play.
By the way, it could hit. Now, if this were NFL, I'd be like, oh my God, I got a bet on Tennessee. The reason why I'm 100% successful with college bets, but I feel like I do pretty damn well with college football gambling, is recognizing how wide the range is for an 18 to 22 year old psychology. And for the Tennessee kids, I say kids, but 18 to 22 year olds, I don't think they're like on the ground. I think they're going, holy shit, that just happened. And now we got a chance to play Georgia. I just think that they're not as bad as they looked against Missouri, and Georgia isn't as dominant as they looked against Ole Miss. It was just the optimal matchup for Georgia. Just like I thought Missouri was going to be a tough matchup for Georgia, and why I thought LSU might be tough for Missouri. And so I don't know if I really care who wins. I suppose if I have money on Tennessee, I guess I would bet it, or I want Tennessee to win. But I don't know. I just want to win my money. I don't really give a fuck if Tennessee wins.
I was worried about the Tennessee game with Mizzou for that reason. I didn't know how they would react
after the
Georgia thing.
That was my reasoning for not wanting to touch it, but, you know. Hey, that's the thing with Missouri, I'm like, and I thought James Carlton and Gabe Bearman talked about that. The leadership on this team reminds them of 2007, and they didn't have that on the 2008 team. And I don't know who he was talking about that they lost. Witherspoon would be one.
Willie Moe
would be another one.
The tight ends?
Rucker, yeah, that's nice.
Kaufman?
I don't know if Kaufman was gone in 08 or
not. I
feel
like he was a senior in 07. I could be wrong on that, but... Certainly Willie Moe and Witherspoon, those two.
And so that they lost it, and this team just isn't going to let that happen. So, you know, I assume that for the Florida game. But, you know, Florida, I mean, Billy Napier, I still think is fighting for his life. They're starting to lose some recruits, too.
That's an important thing.
Yes, it is.
But with Missouri, I think especially defensively, they have a ton of guys who are, like, fringe draft picks who can really improve their stock just late in the year, especially with Missouri now, nationally televised game, a top 10 team in the country. Like, if you're Chris Abrams-Drain, Darius Robinson, whoever you are, Ennis Rakestraw, you can really improve your stock with these last couple games. So I think they're still going to be going balls to the wall. And even guys on offense who won't be eligible till next year.
Sometimes the senior night thing is weird. Guys have, sometimes there's some emotion there, and they – take some time to settle in. It's a little weird play. It can go the other way. You can be fired up and go off.
Yeah.
But there have been some weird senior nights as well. So either way, here is another from the listeners. Let's see what we got. Okay, does anybody wear a Whoop but me in here?
Anybody? No, I'm Apple Watch.
You're Apple Watch. All right, here we go. Tim just finished this week's sode of QFTA and loved the discussion on wearables. I, like you, have been wearing a Whoop for 3 years and wholeheartedly agree on how it's changed my life. While drinking and eating late should be easily identifiable things that impact one's sleep, it's really impactful when you see the data to support it. I have done the Apple Watch, Fitbit, etc., but I feel the Whoop blows the others out of the water. Agreed, it's not for everyone, but I'm 33, track all fitness, water, and calories consumed daily, and it's the best option out there to keep me committed to staying the course. That is from the ill side. I've never worn anything but a Whoop. I am insane with tracking all of this stuff, and I've learned more and more and more about it. How do you enjoy your Apple Watch?
It keeps
Do you track the fitness on there?
Yeah.
Okay.
I used to worry more about the steps and the movement, but I've kind of gotten away from that and kind of just focus on trying to hit the calorie burn goal. That's the number I look at the most.
Yeah.
I don't track my food like you do, which I probably need to do. But yeah, I feel like it keeps me on track.
Yeah. I love it because I can tell. I mean, the data confirms how I feel when I wake up to know, you know, but I love to see how much REM sleep I got, how much deep sleep I got.
I'm a piss poor sleeper, so I wish I tracked that a little more too, because I'd like to get that under control.
And it's just one of those things. And honestly, hey, man, listen, I mean, I would talk about it on TMA. Like the fact that I would eat as a, you know, whatever, I guess, thin guy, a bag of family-sized caramel M&Ms, like at 8:30 at night, and then get up at 5 or 5:30 and just take in all of that shit, empty calories and chocolate, caffeine. And I did that for like a couple of years. Holy shit. You know, I mean, what in the world that I look back on that now? So the thing about eating, you know, even after 7 o'clock when you get up at 5 or 5:30 and how much it impacts you. At the same time, I've also found with regard to these conversations about health, just as an observation, that people don't like to hear it. They can take it in a, I don't know what the right word for it, like we are being, or I am being condescending about it. And it's certainly not coming from me, you know. It's just, it's like, if anything, people ask about it, and I will tell you my experience with it and how it's helped, and it's up to you what you want to do with it. I couldn't care any less, but I have found how helpful it is to, like, not only for weight loss or weight gain, but to just, like, turn it off. And the key to it, to me, is brushing your teeth. Once you brush your teeth, it ends all desire to eat. It is a magic trick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah, it's a good play.
I mean, you guys are going out and having booze, and okay, well, you're not. You are.
I was asleep at 7:30 the other night.
Oh, wow, that's impressive.
The last time I looked at my phone before I rolled over, it was 7:18, and I'm fairly confident I was out by 7:30.
You're going out and chasing ass?
Unless the ass is on my couch, it will not be found.
It will not be chased. Either way, it's a different deal, you know. I mean, I'm at a different point in my life, but that is. That is something that I've observed. And then there are the rare nights where I do get intoxicated, and it's just like I'll get like a, you know, terrible night's sleep.
You can tell on your on your sleep data, yes, you can tell that you had
absolutely.
Some booze.
One of the big stats on Whoop is your sleep recovery. And so, as I've been telling you guys throughout the course of the day, I can tell I am not feeling great. I don't think I'm like super ill or anything, just for the record. But last night, you know, let's see, I slept from 10:25 to 6:25. How convenient. 8 hours on the nose.
Mm.
But I just could tell I just didn't feel great, and I felt sick though, you know, not like I slept poorly. The sleep quality was good, but the recovery was in the yellow, and a good night's sleep will put you, with also the health things, put you in the green, and then the bad ones are the ones in the red, and you will usually, you don't even need to see it, you'll know it before you even look at it.
Right.
You know?
On an ideal night for you, if you don't have a lot going on with responsibility-wise, what time do you like to be asleep by? What time are you getting up by?
A lot of it isn't like to. I will just fall asleep.
Yeah.
In the 9:30 to 10 range, like almost religiously. Occasionally there'll be a 10 to 10:30 or a 9 to 9:30, but 9:30 is the median without question. Yeah. And then I'll wake up, even like today, like my wife's like, man, why are you getting out of bed? I'm like, I got to work on Sound Story, so I got to go because you know, she's like, you ought to sleep in as much as you can. I'm like, I got work, doesn't matter. But I don't. Now that I do it, I like getting up. But a lot of that, again, I'm in a room with, you know, three people who don't have children. But the value of having the time before everybody wakes up, and being able to get things done. And also, even before we had kids, I remember saying how much I loved like 5 a.m. to 6:30 a.m. because it was the only time of the day, especially when I was operating stations, where I wouldn't get a bunch of texts or emails. So it was like the one time of the day where I experienced some form of peace, you know, without people, you know, nobody's doing anything wrong. It's my job, but asking questions or requesting things, or I need to bother them, you know. So I love the serenity of the morning. With that said, I would not give up the creepery of the evening that I enjoyed so many years ago.
Right, so you're burning it on both ends.
Yeah. Back then, I just had a terrible sleep schedule. I had a delayed sleep pattern. It was an absolute mess. I feel so badly for people who have sleep issues. I say it over and over again, but my God, I feel that way. All right, we're going to wrap it up here. I'm anxious to get your guys' perspective on this. This is the woo-woo Kenny Woo one. Hey, Tim, on TMA, you mentioned that St. Louis Chiefs fans is the most cucky thing ever. I am paraphrasing, but I think I have heard you mention that you don't fault a business for making business moves, legally, of course. I know you've mentioned before about Clark Hunt being the vote to move the Rams during the 5-1 voting. Because of the Hunt vote, you have said you think it's odd for past Rams fans to adopt the Chiefs. Again, paraphrasing. I am one who adopted the Chiefs because of Andy Reid and the Arrowhead experience. This was prior to Mahomes. But regarding the Hunt move, I suppose I view it as a business move to open the St. Louis market. It's cutthroat, but I imagine that sort of thing happens all the time with businesses. Do you see the Hunt vote as something different? Am I missing something that Hunt did that is more of a wrongdoing? I completely understand the whole one-state marketing with Mahomes and Kelce at the Blues game is not based on a genuine care for the state or for St. Louis, and I don't put any stake in that. I'll never be a, quote, fan in the sense of those who have been lifetime fans of the team, but I suppose I'm just curious as to why you view the St. Louis Chiefs fandom as such a cucky thing. As such an avid Rams fan during the Bradford years, has Jackson seen friends or people around his age adopt the Chiefs, and how does he feel about it? Thank you guys for taking the question, and may the upcoming holiday season bring you joy and threesomes. Thanks. That's from number 16, Kenny Wu. I read that when he sent it, and he sent it this past Friday. We were talking on Thursday, and my honest reaction is I shouldn't have said it, not because I'm like, ooh, I hope I don't get fired. I don't fucking care, because I really, when it gets down to it, that's not really, really how I feel. What he said is more along the lines of how I feel. I think 9 out of 10, if not more, of the St. Louisans who have adopted the Kansas City Chiefs have no idea about the details of that vote. I'm not sure they would care at this point either. I mean, it's getting to a point of being, it'll be 8 years in 2 months since that vote.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
January of 16.
Yep.
And I think a lot of the people, like when my son, who's 6, goes, why do you hate the Chiefs? And I go, I don't hate them. I go, the Rams used to play, and then it's like, why am I even bothering? But, you know. He goes, you don't like the players? And I go, no, I have nothing against the players. I just, so to say it's cucky is not fair. I shouldn't have said it. And again, that's not like, I would like to apologize. I don't apologize, I suppose. What I'm saying is I really don't think it that way, because I don't think most people are like, oh, I'm a Chiefs fan because Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes showed up to the Stanley Cup final, mm-hmm. or I'm a Chiefs fan because Ryan O'Reilly and the Blues skated around pregame one time with the Chiefs helmets on. They're Chiefs fans because of either the Missouri thing, but more likely because the Chiefs happen to be the most exciting football team, and they're 4 hours to the west, and you can sit there and go, well, they're in the state of Missouri, I need a team, they're fun to watch, and it's as simple as that, you know. And by the way, Clark Hunt, I'm not 100% sure, for the record, that's the reason why he voted for the Carson Project, or for the Inglewood Project, to be clear. I'm not. I also know, I guess I shouldn't say I know, Clark Hunt's vote in a 5-1, where he was the one and the other five were obviously for Carson, that's not what swayed this thing. They weren't like, hold on a second, it was 5-1, let's have a conversation. It was done.
Right.
And I found... I think at the root of this, Jackson, as a veteran of my mind in QFTA, I hate bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And going to Mizzou in the 90s with the weird obsession, and I will never back down on this, that Kansas City people had with St. Louis. I still don't know what the fuck that was about. It's got to be less now, but maybe it's not. I don't know, because I'm not there, and you were there just a few years ago. But you also experienced a group of fans who, had they won a Super Bowl when you were there?
They won when I was there.
Okay, and they also had won a World Series.
Yep.
I got a group of people, I guess, for whatever reason, who were obsessed with St. Louis. I still, to this day, it's an odd thing to me. I have no idea why. My theories on it were the one championship they experienced in their lifetimes were the 85 Royals. It was against St. Louis, but it was tainted. And I don't know what else to say, which is why I was so like, God, I hope nothing weird happens in the Blues' road to the Stanley Cup, because it'll taint it. And they then they doth protest too much. Well, George Orta was out at third base anyway. And I'm like, yeah, it was a fielder's choice. You know, I mean, it's like, if we're really going to, like, play this out, and there's no point in doing it because it's coming from a place of emotion and, you know, it's not necessarily a good faith conversation. But for whatever reason, they just shit on St. Louis. You guys want to be Chicago? And I'd be like, huh? Like, Chicago's a monster global city. St. Louis is fine. It's my hometown. Why are you so worked up about St. Louis? And then, and this was right after I left, then the Chiefs were so close to winning Super Bowls and had much better teams than the Rams, L.A. or St. Louis did, all throughout the 90s. I mean, they were in the AFC Championship. They had Montana. They had Marcus Allen. And then the Rams, out of nowhere, win a fucking Super Bowl. So then it's just like gasoline on the fire for those people. But since then, St. Louis has taken one trajectory. I am making a downward gesture, which I will stand by. Kansas City, I'm not saying it's become Austin or Nashville, but right. Kansas City is not heading in the St. Louis direction, and the Royals have won a World Series, and the Chiefs have won a World Series. So if you're still really worked up about St. Louis, it would almost be like my six-year-old picking on my one-year-old, you know? Right. Like, okay, just kind of leave us be. We're dealing with our own shit, you know? So it's a totally different mindset. So that's one side of the bullshit. Then the other side of the bullshit, I'm just like, you know, Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, do they really want to be in St. Louis for a Stanley Cup game? You know, I don't believe that that was organic. But, hey, it's marketing, right. And I tip my cap. And then the Blues with the Chiefs helmets, that irritated me in the sense that it's like, I understand the average fan not knowing about the vote. I'd be surprised if everybody with the Blues were completely oblivious to it, but whatever, in the whole scheme of things. So that is where I would direct my, that's a little gross, because it's so, you know, I don't know. It's like, I don't know, it's like an influencer doing an ad read that's clearly a plant. And I just go, it's vomit-inducing. But the Chiefs helmets thing and Kelce and Mahomes being here, that's not the reason why St. Louisans have adopted the Chiefs. They're in Missouri, and if the Chiefs were like, you know, who's dog shit right now? But the New York Giants, would there be a bunch of St. Louis area Chiefs fans?
No.
So, I when I said that, I'm like, I really don't feel that way. And then Kenny Wu emailed it, and I'm like, yeah, I need to take that back. Not because I'm like, oh God, Hubbard is going to terminate me and my career will be ending, but because I'm like, yeah, that's not really what I mean. In the moment, I said something that, with the benefit of time, I go, yeah, that's not really what I mean. And I think I've said it over time as well, but in that particular one, I could see how somebody was like, why are you saying that's cucky? Because you've talked about respecting business moves, and that's absolutely what it is. So there it is. Boys, your thoughts. Skate, boy, skate.
Yeah, I think if I deep psychoanalyze myself in this situation, I was always raised and always have and still feel this way that, like, you root for the home team. Like, you always root for the team that you're from, where you're from. And I can't root for a team unless it says St. Louis across the chest, or in the case of colleges, Missouri across the chest. I just can't, like, adopt a team and, like, say I'm a fan of them. And it always would, the right word is, piss me off when I was younger and still times to this day when, like, my friends would be like, fans of take your pick of random ass cities team because they were good. Like, it's like, to me, it was like circumventing the pain and anguish you go through when you're like a fan of the hometown team and you always have been. And it's like, oh, I'm just going to pick this team because they're good. It's like, ugh, that's
it
so
doesn't work that way.
Disingenuous to me, and I hate that. And so I just don't like picking up new teams and just saying, oh, I'm a fan of them. And then, like, especially when you're like reposting their stuff on social media, even grosser. And then on top of that, like, people like at least my age who have now become Chiefs fans, and there's plenty of them, they didn't care about the Rams. They were never at the Rams games. They didn't watch the Rams. And to paraphrase a quote from the late great Kobe Bryant, you weren't in the gym shooting with us. You know, like, yeah, you weren't watching. You weren't at the Dome when they were dog shit, but people were still rooting for them. And now you're going to say you're a Chiefs fan and going to root for them and wear your Chiefs gear and take pictures and all this and go Chiefs. Like, it's just so, like, lame to me. Like, and it's probably me taking my fandom too seriously, and I get that, but like I said, that's part of the fun of it, is taking it seriously. You know, it's okay to be like, I really love this shit and I take it seriously. And so when people circumvent that in a way, and I think this is a very an easy excuse, it's like, oh, my team left and they're in Missouri, and it's like, oh, pay no attention to like what you said, Tim, that they have Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce are generational talents, and they're super exciting to watch.
Right.
Like, you enjoy watching them, be a fan. It's cool. I get that. But, like, the idea of it, like, is just, it's lame to me. I would describe it as lame, and I understand that that's Gen Z bullshit to some people. But that's how I feel. I feel it's lame that you weren't a Rams fan. You didn't care about them. You didn't care that they really left, and you're using it as an excuse to become a Chiefs fan. That's where I'm at.
All right, KG Noontown.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to just, whoever you're a fan of, Plowsy wants to root for the Packers, have at it. I really don't judge anybody by that. But when I was teaching elementary school kids, there was tons of Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes jerseys.
Yeah.
They're exciting. They're marketable. These little kids didn't have a team to root for, so I kind of get it. I thought at first it was a little weird when the adult St. Louisans were acting like lifelong Chiefs fans.
Right.
Doesn't really affect me one way or the other, but I think most of my annoyance is with, like, the national media, and they're all over Mahomes' jock just week in, week out.
Yeah.
They've beat the Kelce, Taylor Swift stuff into the ground. So I think that's where my frustration lies. But I get why an 8-year-old kid hops the red and gold bandwagon.
And I couldn't care any less in the whole scheme of that. I don't even know. That's the thing. When I look at that, it's one of those things, like, I'm glad I'm having this conversation about something that doesn't, you know, lead to, oh, I got to issue an apology or I'm going to get fired for, because sometimes you just say things in the midst of it. We talk for however fucking long. We talk every day. I mean, me and you do it for 4 hours, and then we throw this thing in and sound story and, you know, talking constantly. And I'd like to think, for the most part, I don't have too many where I go, what the fuck did I just say there? And this wasn't a big deal. But since this gentleman, Kenny Woo, brings it to my attention, I'm like, yeah, I don't really feel that way. I don't even know why the fuck I said that. I think deep down, like at its core, the Kansas City shit from the mid-1990s when I was at Missouri, it just caught me so off guard that I think that is at the core of it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where it is. But as far as like from a rational standpoint, when I have a chance to think about it, I go, yeah, I couldn't care any less. Like, I don't even know. Like Kansas, I don't have any ill will towards Kansas. I know you have a different perspective on that. And I think if we lived in Kansas City, we may have a different perspective on it. I don't have any ill will toward Illinois. I don't have any ill will toward the Cubs. I couldn't all of a sudden hate the 49ers because, you know, we're in St. Louis. They're in San Francisco. I mean, that was an LA-San Francisco thing. So the truth is, I just don't really give a shit. I'm irritated by that vote, but I also don't think Clark Hunt's one vote played any role in what wound up happening, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think, if anything, I'm irritated by the shit from the 90s. And again, it's not like I spend time thinking about it. I'm just trying to psychoanalyze my thought process. And then also, I thought the thing with the blue skating around with the Chiefs helmets was just like, oh, come the fuck on.
Right.
But whatever.
Pulling the wool over people's eyes. And
I get, and I'm just like, I don't know. It's like, I don't know. Like the standing ovations at Busch Stadium, it's more of a look. It's not real. Right. I think that's what I mean by I don't like the bullshit.
Look at us.
It's not about really an appreciation for the player. It's about look at us. And I'm not saying that is for everyone who stands up, but that's what I don't have time for. That's what I go, okay, now that I know you're one of those people, it saves me time. We won't be hanging out, you know, so fine.
Jack, you're one of the truest sons I've come across. can you root for KU in any capacity? If it helps Mizzou, can you root for the Jayhawks?
You would have in 2007. There's no way you wouldn't have.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember back then.
I know you were nine.
Yeah, I was still very much.
It absolutely was great for Missouri.
Sure.
Kansas was undefeated. And I remember I was sitting in Pinkel's kitchen with him bullshitting after we did the podcast, just me and him. And it might have even been on the podcast, but then we wound up talking for a while after that. And I said, you had to be pulling for Kansas in 2007. He goes, I wouldn't pull for Kansas under any circumstance. I'm like, and I get him saying that, and that's a nice little thing to say. But I'm like, that benefited Missouri that Kansas was ranked, and also, and this isn't because it's Kansas, I couldn't fucking care any less, Kansas wasn't at Missouri's level, you know, that in 2007. And that's not to say that Kansas wasn't better the following year. I don't know. 2007 was when it mattered. That's when they were playing for the national championship still. That's when it mattered. And there was just no way that Kansas was beating that team. And so it was a great situation because Kansas was kind of propped up by a pseudo Big 12 schedule that year, you know, to be the equivalent of being undefeated in the SEC and then having Missouri at the very end, and you didn't play, I guess this year, Alabama or Georgia, you know, and everybody's like, oh, you know, it's kind of like Ole Miss against Georgia. I felt very comfortable that Georgia was going to beat them handily if you looked at Ole Miss's work so far this year. That's kind of what Kansas was that year. And so it worked to Missouri's advantage for Kansas to be perceived greater than they actually were. And then it was that rivalry at Arrowhead Stadium. It worked to Missouri's advantage to beat them. If anything, Missouri probably should have beaten them by more than they did, and that was a bit of a miss, but it didn't matter. They still moved to number one in the country. So in that situation, what's good for business? Same thing that this gentleman points out. It's good for Kansas to win. Great. I'm not really worked up about their position in the Civil War, you know?
Yeah, I think Kansas football, like against Oklahoma, I was legitimately rooting for Kansas to beat them. Like that was, yeah. It had benefited Missouri, and it was just kind of cool to see. Kansas basketball, never in a million years. Ugh.
Yeah, the Kansas, I certainly don't have the ire. I'm beyond amused by what goes on with the officiating in that building. And again, that's coming from somebody, and I've gone to a game there. I have an appreciation for the history of it, kind of like I do with Alabama football and Duke basketball. But it is phenomenal. And then taking the Phil Pressey thing out, and I think there's a Keon Dueling thing. Who knows all the shit that's going on? It's just comical, you know. There was a game, I think it was against Arkansas last year with Missouri, that the calls were just ridiculous.
Yeah.
I called attention to it, but what goes on at Fog Allen is just amazing. But that's one of my things with college basketball is the dramatic charge call that, you know, is coin flip. And, you know,
yeah. Do you think that's just a matter of officials getting caught up in the moment and the hype of the home crowd, and that's where that kind of home cooking
comes
from?
Yeah, I actually do think so. And I'm sure they're aware of it to an extent. I also think some of it's subconscious. It's why during the, and I already made reference to it, Aaron Taylor and the other guy's name who was on the call, the Missouri-Georgia game, one of the things that is an amateur, for lack of a better term, or an inexperienced broadcaster tell is the play-by-play and color guy getting really worked up with the home team, even though they are a neutral broadcast. Not because Aaron Taylor was pulling for Georgia. He couldn't care any less. There's not a doubt in my mind. But they don't call a lot of games. They're in front of 93,000 people. And it just I think it's a subconscious thing. So as a broadcaster, if you're aware of that part of the psychology, then you almost have to compensate more for it. So I know, like, for example, with Joe Buck, he hates his call of the 2006 Cardinals winning the World Series. And the reason he hated it was because he was so aware of the criticism he was going to get if he made a big deal out of it, because people, oh, you're a Cardinal fan, that he downplayed it. And while he said that's a World Series winner for the Cardinals, which was he had to be aware of it, kind of subtle tribute to his father, certainly not as pronounced as we'll see you tomorrow night in 2011. But when the Cardinals won the World Series in 82, he said that's a winner, a World Series winner for the Cardinals. And that's what he said in 2006, not those exact words. But he still was, like, understated with it. And he either wrote that in his book or we just talked about it at one point, how much he didn't like that call because he downplayed it intentionally because he knew there was going to be criticism from, I guess, Tigers fans saying he's all excited because the Cardinals won. And when in reality, you take yourself out of that. And I maybe people understand that now because he's talked about it so much. But broadcasters just aren't pulling for teams. I don't think Aaron Taylor and that Sam guy were pulling for Georgia. I just thought they weren't really good, you know.
Right.
I'm not mad at him for not being really good. It was a shame for as good of a game as it was that it wasn't Nestler and Danielson, you know.
Right.
They had the B or C team because CBS had a triple header that day.
Yeah, that's interesting on the Buck thing because I feel like whenever, at least the Cardinals, or honestly, anytime I see the end of the 06 World Series, it's almost always Shannon's call on the radio.
Oh, that's interesting.
Of, you know, the Cardinals are World Series champions for the first time since 1982 or some to that extent, or World Series champions for 2006. Like, I remember that call. I never remember Bucks, but when they do the 2011, it's like the what a team, what a ride,
right.
Which is much more, I feel like, I don't want to speak for Joe Buck, but like probably more to what he wanted.
Yeah, I think he won an Emmy. He won an Emmy for that World Series.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly a lot of it was Game 6, as he'll be the first one to say, but he also was, that was one time when he was struggling with his voice. So you'll also notice there that he doesn't sound, perhaps, but that's when he was dealing with that voice thing. I don't know if you guys
remember that. I didn't know about that.
But that was like he was really worried career was going to be over. Anything else? KG and O-Town, what would you like to say to the people? Your debut episode here.
Dream come true.
Is it really?
I think I'll have it. I need to get a Whoop band because I feel like tonight's going to be a rough night's sleep. I'd like to track it. Just thinking about this over and over again.
Sure, absolutely.
The thing is,
how much deep sleep did you get? How much REM sleep did you get?
Yeah, but I got to be ready because I'm on TMA again tomorrow.
That's right.
I am not, but I'll be here. Maybe I'll just like peek in. Say, how do you do?
Oh, really?
You should call.
Really get people
in.
Going.
Oh, I shouldn't do that?
No, I think it'd be funny.
Oh, is that right?
I think it'd be, yeah.
Were you dealing with it today?
I mean, the thing about it is, like, you can kind of control how much you're dealing with it because you kind of control, like, what text you read. Like, you can tell just some people are in there just to, like,
do
shit
it.
Disturbers. Right. And it's like, okay, I recognize that. Get out of here. And so I don't worry about that shit. But, like, when you're still getting a bunch of texts throughout the entire show, people are still listening, and that's really what you got to focus on.
There was a guy that must have said four or five times today he was done.
Right.
Oh, really?
But there you are.
Because they want you to read it so that you can. It's
weird. It's one of those things that I talk about on QFTA that I know that unless you are in the arena, so to speak, you can't possibly imagine. I think people think I guess, or maybe we, but probably more I, overstate these things. I guess now that, well, what do you think? I mean, you're now in the trenches, so you actually get to see that which you may have been skeptical of as a listener.
It's eye-opening. It's eye-opening.
Yeah, and I don't even think you've necessarily seen any of the super crazy shit yet.
No. A lot of penises.
Like, the law hasn't been involved in 2023. I don't want to jinx it.
Who was in the other... Maybe it was Greg Warren the other day that mentioned that there was a lot of male nudity in the text inbox, and I kind of thought maybe that was just a throwaway one-liner.
Oh,
but
no.
Then I opened somebody's text today, and their text from Wednesday was, sure enough, an erect penis.
Yeah, there's one that's, like, that always gets sent in that's, like, a little creepily, like, someone took that picture and, like, sent it in.
Oh, no.
And, like, I'm sure if I showed you.
Oh, like a selfie?
Yes, yeah. In the mirror. Yeah. That one's, like, that's not, like, one pulled off the internet.
Yeah, and but I believe that's a black gentleman sent in by a white gentleman. Now, why he's sending it in, I don't have the answer, but I believe I know who the gentleman is, and he's a white gentleman. And the selfie is of a black gentleman. Why he's sending it, I don't have an answer, but at the same time, a guy sends in Mark McGuire's dick all the time.
Yeah, that one doesn't even
bother
me.
And I'm pretty confident that's not Mark McGuire.
I'm also
I don't want to say with certainty, though.
I'm also fascinated with the wives and girlfriend picture.
I have no idea what that's about.
That one's weird.
I have no idea what that's about.
That one's weird.
Because Jay used to ask for it, and so I, you know, but he didn't, like, ask for it out of nowhere. Once it would happen, then it would, when it just, like, comes up out of nowhere, and it's not just one person. There's kind of, like, 5 to 10 guys just out of nowhere. It's just, I don't know what to say.
Congrats, you know? On the sex.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just a unique deal, you know.
Yeah.
One may find their significant other attractive for their sake. I hope they do. But, like, why would you then send it in to strangers hosting a show? I don't know. I mean, it's fine. I don't go excuse myself and then go beat off. It's just like, oh, there's a nice looking woman. And, you know. you keep sending it in. I don't know what to do. And I don't know what thing. I'm supposed to do.
And all we know these people by, for the most part, is their screen name, their right. text name. So, like, it's like, now I respect Shrimply Pibbles. Like,
Shrimply Pibbles has been very active with it. Yeah. And, by the way, Shrimply Pibbles legitimately has, if that's his wife, I have no idea who
I
he is.
I think it is because he's in the picture.
Okay. Well, I don't know him, though.
Point, case in point. Right. Like, we don't know. Like, I don't know who
that's
Shrimply
like the
Pibbles
Swing
is.
Board member thing. Like, they're, like, convinced it's him, but the woman isn't her. I'm like, they're both of them. It's both of them.
Right.
And what do you think? This guy has a million different pictures with that he's propped up so he can send them into.
Right. It's seeking validation, but we don't know who you are for the most part.
I mean, again, it's fine. It doesn't really hurt anything. It's not like we take them and then send them out. It's just, I would be curious. I'd like the psychology of the wife pick sent into TMA.
Yeah.
And I don't know who can answer that for me.
Well, we better get Dan Phoenix on the horn.
Dan Phoenix is active. Yeah.
He sent in his whole damn camera roll the other day.
Off the top of your head.
So weird.
Off the top of your head, what situation, if you can remember one, has led to like the biggest just influx of something killed it a couple weeks ago?
Oh God, yeah.
What was that?
Well, you're right.
Oh, it was the guessing game.
Oh yeah. It broke the text internet.
Yeah, that
it truly did. Like, people say, oh, it broke the internet. But that really broke, and it took me a few minutes to realize that the thing couldn't handle the number of texts coming in.
But I've seen it in person a couple of times when Iggy will say something, and it's just like a slot machine. Just,
and
it's
so
crazy.
The thing that, you know, and I don't know what irritates me, which is why I'm like, why the fuck did I say that about the Chiefs and their fans, you know? Because it's like, I don't care. But, now you see it. It's like, man, you know, Tim only reads the texts that are about Iggy. It's like, well, come and look at the text inbox. Yeah. The texts are about Iggy. Yeah. If there is a rare one, I don't know who gets shit more, me or Doug, but they're so limited. You don't really, I guess the rankings of the shit given via the text inbox, there's no way that we will dispute this because we see the same thing. So who's number one?
Iggy.
Who's two?
Plowhawk.
Who's three?
I guess me.
Yeah. And then I don't know on four or five because it's like Doug used to get it when we had politics conversations, or I would get it because they were mad at Doug and then they were mad at me.
Why are you letting him do this?
Right. That's another one. I'd just be like, how do you, what, why? Like if somebody emailed Doug complaining about something I said, fuck are they emailing you? And I never understood that. I still don't. I'll be in a coffin and I won't understand that one.
As small of a part as I have had with you guys over the course of almost a year now, every once in a while I will get an Instagram DM wanting me to hold usually Plowboy accountable on something.
And then don't you want to just go, hey, who do you contact?
Yeah.
It's a bitch move. I mean, that's how I view it. It's a bit like when Jay came in and we were, I don't know what it was. It was something about our decision, I guess, my contract being up at KFNS and how that was written about in the Post-Dispatch. And I guess at one point, for some reason, I don't know why, and I'm not saying this to mock him, but it did happen. When Bernie Miklas came to KFNS, I came on his show a few times, and I guess it was during the pandemic, and so I would just do it from, were you there?
It was right when it was Bernie's first day was my first day.
Oh, is that right?
Uh-huh.
Oh, then there you go. Perfect timing. And so I just joined him from my basement on, you know, I don't know, probably wasn't even Zoom, probably just the KFNS connection.
Yeah, you were probably in there.
And I guess John Hadley would sit in there with him during the show, and for some reason he brought up the fact that I was a free agent in 13 months and that they were working on a contract extension. So you remember that? Something that was, you know, my contract here is up in 13 months, but I doubt like Kiyoski's gonna pop in and like mention it
on Courtney on Courtney's show,
you know. And so I'm like, oh, and then Bernie goes, oh, whoa, hold on, are we breaking some news here? So, you
know? Probably Bernie was in a tough spot too.
Right,
his first show.
I mean, he was of course in a great set of mind because he had just started there, and it was all good. It was fine. I'm just like, oh, well, now this is now going to be discussed. And so then, since it was, then Jay, of all people, would get, like, these big missives sent to him asking, you know, what we were going to do. And I go, why don't they just email me? Like, I can answer some questions. Certainly, if I know, I might have to say I can't say anything. But otherwise, like, why are you reaching out to Jay? And I remember there was a day at KFNS, I can still picture it, where he goes, well, if you're going to take questions, let me just read this one here, something like that. It was like this long thing, and I go, what in the hell? Why wouldn't somebody just reach out to me? I don't understand that. So you now have seen people mad with the Plowhawk about a take.
Yeah.
And I just go, why wouldn't you? I mean, it happens. I get these on the Hubbard email thing, you know. Well, I mean, even, but in a way, it's a good, like, here's how I started the podcast. They were the one I sent to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then that one was more complimentary to you, obviously, speaking as somebody who's Jewish, but how we handled that conversation last week about Israel, they just didn't have your email address.
Right.
So maybe that's it. But I mean, I'm pretty out there with my email address, you know.
And you've always been pretty forthcoming saying, if you got a question, email me.
I want you to.
But I always wondered if it wasn't because Jay had like a relationship with the fan page and the listening audience where he was in mixing it up with them more. Well,
I suppose so. That brings me to something that just popped up. And I've theorized this before. And there is, in I don't know what year it was. Oh, maybe 2014 or 15. On my Facebook page, you get Facebook memories that pop up. I guess that's how I used to communicate with the audience, you know. And how different I was treated. And it's, in a way, it actually, I don't, it makes me sad, is would certainly be overstating it, but it was eye-opening. Because in 2014 or 15, we did a partnership at 920 with Emmis, which owned 105.7 The Point and Keishi and 97.1 and a 96.3. And ironically, by the way, the partnership was we simulcast 920 on 105.7 HD2.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a significant step to have that partnership because they were going to sell it as well as be on the FM dial. And that's 20, it couldn't have been 16 because we left there in 16. But either way, like 15, and when we had the 105.7 HD2, I think then we went to KFNS in 16. But either way, it started at 920, and I announced it there. And a number of the people whose names I recognize, who I know I can count on to, like, you know, usually it's more passive aggressively shit on me now, were like in my own personal feed, like so happy for complimenting and like fired up and all this stuff. And so help me, I trace it back to the article in which my salary or my contract was publicized. Mm. And that's when everything changed. And I'm really not angry about it, but it's an eye-opening thing because I went from like the man of the people to, oh, well, fuck him, you know? And that's when it was like, oh, well, he's in charge of everything. I went like when the man and woman thing happened, which was a decade ago now, the support we had was, God, it was unanimous. I mean, certainly it was kind of obvious what was going to happen if you had any clue, but right. Also the support was unanimous before we succeeded and that thing failed. And it's just not the way that it is anymore. And I don't know what will ever change that. I feel like if anything, I've done more sacrificial things in the last 7 years than I did before that article. But that truly changed it, I think. I mean, I don't know that, and I'm sure nobody's going to, you know, write that. But that was it. That was the change. That was to me, that was the change. Because it's not like I'm doing anything differently. If anything, I think I'm probably more calm now. But that was it. Because I read that in 2014, and I'm just like, holy shit, look at this. Like all the support. And it was about an HD2 announcement. I mean, it wasn't that big of a deal. But that is what I trace it to, because I know I haven't, you know, it's not like I'm like, oh, they must be aware that I, like, you know, fucked somebody's wife or something like that. Like, you know, I don't know.
Right.
So
yeah.
I don't know.
Look at the timeline. There's,
right.
Yeah, there's
that's
a clear
it.
Point.
That's it. It's right. it's June of 2016.
Yep. I get that.
It's June of 2016. I believe, unless maybe, you know, I mean, you're still kind of listener / TMA. Are you aware of anything? I've wondered, nurse, this aloud.
What, in terms of, like, rumors or things about?
I don't know. I just saw that, and I'm just like, that is, like, if I were to post something now, which, like, the idea of me even doing that.
Making, like, just a standalone Facebook
post. I used to love when
I would think you had been, like, you're, like, a hostage.
I've been hacked.
Yeah, I used like, to you're love when you would, like, update people on where you were going to be out having booze. Or
oh,
your,
yeah. Well,
your updates from, your updates from
absolutely.
Vegas.
And I'm like, hey, yeah, oh, my God. And we were really doing some good, creepy shit, you know? But that's how I used Twitter and Facebook as like a group text in a way. So sometimes those will pop up and I'll be like, oh my God, I truly think like my buddies who, you know, at that time were probably, well, even younger than you are now, a little older than you are now, Jackson, had to be like, God, he's got to like have a coke habit. You know, he's got to, you know, something's off. He's always in Las Vegas. He's always posting kind of like lack of self-awareness shit. We have 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds. You know, I guess something just happened. You know, I'm not the first guy we know who started doing junk, you know, but it's just kind of surprising. He's, you know, 33 and just, you know, just a fucking mess.
Social media was different back then.
It was, but also, like, I look at it and I go, what? Like, it'd be one thing if I was, like, 22, you know, but, I mean, I was in my mid-30s. And now I look at life, like, if my buddies were doing that now, I mean, again, now we're talking mid-40s, but still. I'd just be like, at this point, I'd be like, oh, you know, he went through a divorce and he's trying to get laid and hey, God bless, you know, I understand the program. But I was not. And I was just like a fucking mess. But I wasn't a mess. I mean, we were having a great time and I was with the same person I'm with now, just acting like a fucking lunatic, you know? Right.
Those social media memories are a blessing and a curse because it's nice to relive some of that stuff, but I'll see some sort of crazy status update that
I post. Cringy.
Oh, my God. Oh, I delete it.
I do, too.
I don't want to be reminded of
that. Oh, I don't look.
But I mean, a lot of it's like your exit poll suggestions from 2010, you know, or Jay with feet all over his face. Yeah.
That's good. That's the good shit.
That's the good shit, absolutely.
KG, to your question about something in my memory that spurred the text line to almost explode. The one that always comes to mind is when Iggy planted a picture of Lana Rhodes in the text line.
Incredible.
And then
somebody sent a picture in Atlanta.
Right, of Lana Rhodes. And then Tim picked it out and was like, is that your phone number?
Yeah, well, I mean, I looked at the number and I go, I recognize that. Like, I still can, like, there are very few phone numbers. I don't know your number off the top of my head, or your number, Peter, off the top of my head. I mean, how many people know phone numbers? But Iggy's, I've been calling
forever.
Stands
out.
I guess it does, but also I just like, God, I know that number. And then I just figured, I'm like, oh, this is, God, it's going to be disappointing because this is like somebody I know, and now he's like a texter trying to cause shit.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking it was. I wasn't looking to like out him. And then I'm like, hold on, Iggy, is that your number? Like, I was, it just like kind of played out over the air.
Yeah, he was sitting right behind me, we were at KFNS, and I was like, what the fuck? What the fuck is going on?
I might have to hunt that segment down tonight.
Oh, I'm sure it's in.
I was doing it from my cable in Jupiter. Yeah, I remember it.
I'm sure that's already in the skeleton.
Yeah.
Because that was certainly one I had cut and brought over from KFNS. If it's not in there, it can easily
Breaking
be
news.
Put.
For those, everybody in this room know, I'd sent Joe Buck like 15 spots to cut. And I'm like, boy, this is going to be... And he just did it, and then he just sent it back, didn't even say anything.
Oh, they're done.
They're done.
Oh, attaboy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's why I'm like, I just want to say this any chance I get. Anytime, it's like the way I was so adamant about Joe Strauss, and I felt like I was outspoken about Joe Strauss after he passed, because I didn't do it while he was alive. I think people knew Burwell was a good guy, but they just didn't agree with a lot of his stuff. I didn't agree with a lot of his stuff. We had a one-on-one face-to-face conversation one time at Rams Park about Rush Limbaugh, and I was like taking Rush Limbaugh's side. That was when he said the media was, he phrased it weird, but wanted to see a black quarterback succeed. And anyway, Burwell and I had this conversation. I still disagree with him to this day about his mindset on it. Neither here nor there. I thought the world of Brian Burwell, but people knew Burwell was a good guy. If they didn't like him, they were usually, you know, you could figure it out, the reason.
Mm-hmm.
But Strauss was a great guy, but who, you know, publicly, you would never think that. And now people, I don't think necessarily think Joe isn't a good guy. I don't think people understand how great of a guy Joe Buck is. That's what I'm talking about now. And so any chance I get to say it, I want to say it. Because I think that there are oftentimes that people get miscategorized either in the good way or the bad way. And that's not my job for you to figure it out. But I will tell you when I'll do it on the good side. And Brian Burwell, Joe Strauss, and Joe Buck is, and I'm not saying it just because he emailed me back. I mean, this goes back to the fucking 1990s. He is just a great fucking guy who does not need at all to be as great of a guy. I mean, he's like hosting the Guns and Hoses thing next Wednesday night, and he's doing spots for it. You know, he's just doing it. I mean, the man makes like, I don't even know what the fuck, you know, I think I have an idea what he makes. I mean, he doesn't need to be, obviously, doesn't need to be doing it. He's just like, but he just does, he's a kind, good person. He is the kind of person that I admire, not just because of his, you know, situation, but because of the way that I know he could go about treating people, but he does treat people. And so any chance I get a chance to say it, I want to say that to drive that home.
One of the under-the-radar things I love about Joe Buck was the Tim Kirkjian impression he used.
Yeah. Hey, guys, how you doing?
He's a 101 listener, and he will occasionally text me to opine, but I must leave it at that.
Is he Tiny Peepee?
No, he's not.
What a revelation that would be.
The texts come to my phone, not into the 101 text inbox. There it is, KG in O-Town. Even when I plan on going brief, what do we do here? Do we do an hour and 10 minutes?
Hour five.
That's an abbreviated emergency QFTA.
That's a 9-iron flighted.
It is. Yeah.
Abbreviated finish.
That is.
Well, I appreciate you having me in.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, what an experience. Sorry, no erotic stories. I don't know what to tell you.
I might fabricate one for under a pen name here for
you. Oh, is that right?
Point. Yeah.
We had him. It was Gangster Pete's buddy. But that was usually just him by himself.
That was self-erotica.
Deebs. Yeah. His name. Send anything in you want. Anything gets read. T. McKernan at InsideSTL.com. Thank you to our sponsor, studio sponsor, Longo Biggs, online at longobiggs.com. Got to know those guys really well. Good people. Doug Biggs, C.D. Longo, Longo Biggs will take care of you and your personal injury needs. Doug was at the trivia night this week, and they are TMA listeners. They are local. They are here in the community. And they will take wonderful care of you. They care about their reputation, so they're going to make sure that they take great care of you. And on top of it, they are going to handle your case. It's not going to be delegated to someone else. That's Longo Biggs, online at longobiggs.com. Also, carltoninsurance.net. Mark Hanna at Evergreen Wealth Strategies. James Carlton at carltoninsurance.net. Seth Goldkamp and Design Air Heating and Cooling at designairservice.com. And Jamie Burkhardt, Clayton Patterson, Peter Mungan, Aston Ryan, Cyberg, at Munganess St. Louis Acura and Munganess Burkhardt Alton Toyota, stlouisacura.com and altontoyota.com. For Peter Rep making his debut, for KG and O-Town making his debut, for Action Jackson, I'm Tim McKernan. This has been the Tim McKernan Show from the Longo Biggs Studio.